all those things coming your way today. But I'm really excited to have Dr. Terry Simkin in the office. She used to live here. Now she lives in Essex. And she is about to do some work with the CSIRO. And she focuses particularly on imposter syndrome. So that's not where you're faking it till you make it. That's where you're thinking everyone thinks you're totally fake. But the last thing she just did was deliver a lecture about fantasy writer Terry Pratchett and leadership. Hello.
Hello.
I love Terry Pratchett.
Oh, he's brilliant, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Author of what, how many books?
40-something. Odd Squirrel books plus all the add-on books, yeah.
Oh, what's he got to do with leadership?
Oh, he's
avoided at all costs.
He's an unintentional management guru. I just presented a lecture at the Cambridge Festival of Ideas in the UK on this topic. So pulling out quotes and examples of how Terry Pratchett actually provides some really good tips and hints about how we should be leading in our modern age. He's fantastic.
That policeman character taught me so much about
Sam Vimes
about parenting.
Absolutely.
You turn around and do what's in front of you. Is that okay?
Do the job in front of you.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That carries through. And you know, Sam Vimes obviously made a lot of appearances in that lecture because he embodies, you know, the embracing diversity, really good, capacity for compassion, distributive leadership, all of those sorts of things.
All of which he does reluctantly, which is what's so great
about
that character.
Yeah.
But he does because they're right. So, look, imposter syndrome.
Yes.
Why did you get interested in this?
I got interested in this through my own experience of having done my PhD. I remember going to hand my PhD in after 5 years of sort of grueling hard work and basically sat in my car outside UTAS in Sandy Bay and said, I just can't do this. Like once this thing is out there, it's going to prove that I shouldn't have been doing this. I came from a low socioeconomic background. Nobody in my family ever went to university. And so in my mind, my narrative was people like me don't do PhDs. And so I thought, genuinely.
And this is at the point where you've actually done it.
I've done it, yeah.
This is not at the point where you don't sign up for it because people like you don't do it.
No.
Which happens at the point where you're halfway through and you give up.
Yep.
You've done it.
This is
it. It's in your hand.
Yeah. Convinced that I'd been turning up to UTAS, talking to my supervisors, and they were actually humouring me and were basically said, look, it's ready to go, hand it in just to sort of, put it out there and it would have come back big, fat fail on it. And I was absolutely convinced that was going to be the case. And I actually didn't want to get out of my car because I thought once it's out there, everyone's going to know. So I started thinking about this, thinking, well, I can't be the only person who has experienced this. And that's how I came across the construct. Of imposter phenomenon, and once I took up an academic post in the UK, I started looking at this and have been working on it for about 3 or 4 years.
Why do you call it imposter phenomenon?
It is a phenomenon. It was the original research was done in the 1970s, and Pauline Rose Clance, who is a theorist, she coined the term imposter phenomenon because a syndrome is much more about, it's very hard and fast. It's not contextual. People can be or feel like an imposter in some context, but not in others. So it's not something that's completely constant.
Mm. And how do you overcome it?
Oh, God.
Because I know that people would have been listening to you and those thoughts. So every performer has that. Every interesting actor biography says, I'm waiting for them to tap me on the shoulder and go, you're not that good.
Yeah. I wish I had a penny for every time someone said, you've just described my life when we talk about how it actually plays out. Yeah. About 70% of people will experience this at some point in their lives.
Is it a self-esteem issue? Is it because you weren't raised by parents who said, you're wonderful, you're great, you're going to be incredible?
No, well, that can be part of it.
Yeah.
It comes from social learning, it comes from parenting, school, and of course social narratives in their community. So if the social narrative says that, we talked about women in science, tech, engineering and maths, which is where my research sits, if you're told that engineers aren't women and you don't see any women in the workforce and you don't see any women in leadership, then it's not plausible. It doesn't mean it's impossible and doesn't mean it's not right and it's not equitable. It's just not plausible because we're making that story right. Going up against those social narratives, the narratives that our parents have laid down for us and for what we continue through our lives, is really difficult to push against. And so in response to your question, it's really unpicking all of those mental head tapes, those experiences and ideas about ourselves that we continue through our life. So it's unpicking that and creating a different narrative.
19 to 7 ABC Radio Hobart. You're listening to Dr. Terry Simpkin. She's a worldwide expert in education, and she's in Australia to visit family, but also to do some work with a bunch of people while she's here, including CSIRO, and does a lot of work on imposter syndrome or imposter phenomenon, amongst other things. So if you're unpicking all of that, you have to build a kind of whole new self then. If you've operated, if people go, oh my God, that's my whole life, I always feel like a fake. You know, what kind of self do you build that thinks that they're fine, but isn't then one of these people who is way overshooting what their capabilities really are?
Oh, no, that's a different construct altogether. Obviously, there's a number of people in the public arena at the moment who are, you know, clearly incompetent but believe themselves to be eminently competent. That's Kruger-Dunning. That's a completely different thing. What we're talking about here is an intellectual sense of phoniness or fraudulence. Mm. So despite a track record of success, individuals who experience this will believe themselves to be less than competent than what everybody else believes them to be, and in the face of objective evidence. So coming back to this plausibility thing, it's about, you know, rationalising away the evidence to make the story right. So if I felt that I shouldn't have been doing a PhD, I shouldn't have, you know, been working so hard on it over the last 5 years, that my supervisors were, just basically
tricking
humouring me.
So they want it. They want the money. They want the outcomes. They'll take anyone.
That's what's going through my mind. What you have to do then is go back to where did I learn that? Where did I learn that people like me don't do that?
Yes, but what are you left with? If you've lived through your insecurities all your life, what have you got left after that?
Then you start rebuilding those narratives, taking the evidence that's there that suggests that, you know, imposters or people with imposter very rarely fail, because they are also often perfectionists. So they will work and put huge amounts of effort and energy into making sure that they don't fail.
And but there's problems with that, because you take less risks and you have less time with your family and your friends.
That's right. Leads to depression, anxiety, neurotic perfectionism. So whilst people often believe this is all just a bit of self-doubt, it's not. It's a constant cycle of going back to that sort of first principle is, I can't do this because I might fail, or now I've taken this on, I have to work so hard so that I don't fail.
Terry, is it gendered? Do you think this women suffer from or experience this in greater numbers with greater intensity than men?
The jury is out on whether it's a gendered construct. It's generally thought of as being something that's experienced more often by women than it is men. I don't believe that it is, but I believe that the genders experience it differently because we've got a different social narrative. So women have got unconscious bias, a whole raft of expectations that have been in existence for centuries, perhaps millennia, that are different to how men come to the world. And so whilst women perhaps may be experiencing the imposter phenomenon in the same sorts of numbers, they experience it differently because not only are they experiencing what's going on in their own heads, but they're also bashing up against social and workplace structures that we know are sometimes implicitly biased or perhaps not supportive of women's progress. Just as an example.
So in terms of then unpicking that level of it, and in terms of management and how you might as a leader create a working environment that encourages people to not feel that. You know, I've had some really interesting conversations with women in management and women in science about going, well, I don't want to stand out actually. Like, as a woman, I like to fit in and belong.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to lead from a position where I fit in and belong, not that male thing of like, well, I'll just do it anyway.
It's exactly right. And we're coming to the point. It's really,
and that was a fascinating conversation.
It's a really interesting point, because we are coming to a real watershed then, that we have to start looking at the way that our organisations are run. And again, this is another aspect of my academic interest, is actually looking at emerging managerial paradigms, how we actually shift the structures of our organisations because leadership used to be the great man theory, as you said, it was very strong, very stable, very charismatic.
Got to sacrifice everything to be in the role, available 24/7.
Absolutely. Now our workplaces need to be much more inclusive, more collaborative, more distributed, connected, more compassionate, more mission-based, because we have to shift to a different way of doing business because our environment has shifted. You mentioned innovation before. It's very difficult to be innovative if you're afraid of failing. So those systems inside organisations have to keep up with A, what's going on in our external environment in terms of business, but also having a look at how the people inside are actually interacting with those systems and bureaucracies.
So if you're afraid to innovate because you might fail, it's not failure that's the problem, is it? It's shame that's the problem.
Shame and guilt, yeah.
And is the imposter syndrome also driven by the idea that someone's going to come along and unmask you?
Absolutely. You mentioned that tap on the shoulder, that somebody's going to come along and say, I'm terribly sorry, you've made this massive mistake, you shouldn't be doing this job.
And then what happens? Project. I'm just trying to think it through logically of what the actual fear is. So you get unmasked, and then what? Everyone's going to turn around and say what?
Well,
you're outcast.
Well, yeah, I'm going to be shamed. The work of Brené Brown is fairly popular at the moment, and she does a lot of work with guilt and shame, and it follows this idea that the people experiencing this will internalize their failure, so it's all my fault, regardless of whether it is actually their fault or not. But they will externalize success. So, congratulations on that fabulous project. Oh, it wasn't me; it was my team. I just got lucky. I was in the right place at the right time. So there's an incapacity to absorb their own success, and of course that continues in a cyclical manner, but they will take on all the failure.
So we've had some really interesting conversations at work about people going in for their performance reviews and who will and who won't say that they've done a good job and who will and who won't ask for more money.
Yep.
And that's definitely gendered in this workplace.
Yes. Well, yes.
Because, and some of my colleagues would be like, no, I don't want to do. I'm not going to go in there and go, I did this well. I'm good at this. I'm good at that. If they can't notice, if I have to tell them, then I don't care. And I thought that was so interesting because that's what my grandmother used to say to me about my mum, going, if she has to ask you for help, by that point, it's too late.
Yes.
That need, that desire to be noticed for your success rather than have to name and claim it.
Yeah, and there's some research that was done in the 80s which identified that women have a different way of valuing their place in the workforce and put different sorts of value on their own work.
Such as?
For example, if this particular experiment identified that if you had a team of four women, for example, and a team of four men, and they said, here's a bunch of money to do a certain job, do the job and you get that money, but you need to distribute the rewards. The women overwhelmingly said, well, there's four of us, we'll get 25% each. The men basically say, well, I did X amount, and they pay by how much effort they put in.
Mm-hmm.
So women are much more likely to be equitable, whereas men are more likely to sort of identify the ratios of effort.
Which is a kind of equitableness.
It is a kind of equitableness.
Because you're like, well, you did almost nothing and I did a heap, so I should get more.
Yeah, but when we look at that in the terms that you mentioned, it's often unlikely that particularly people with imposter phenomenon experiences will actually put their hand up and say, I want X amount, because they will devalue their own value in the workplace, or the value of the work that they're putting in.
So if someone's listening to this going, oh, that's me. I don't want to live more of my life like this. Where do you start?
Start by having a think about where these stories came from and having a think about the behaviours. I mean, one of the first things that comes out of an imposter's mouth when they're told some praise or they're given some feedback is, oh, thank you, but did you notice this little failure or this little setback or whatever? So rather than going on to identify where you think the shortcomings are, just say thank you. And that's really difficult. It sounds like a simple thing, but language precedes behaviour. So, and get a mentor. Get somebody who's not interested in being nice to you. They are the person who actually provides you with objective feedback about how you're actually working or coming to the rest of your life. So having a look at your stories, having a think about where this behaviour comes from and rewriting your narrative.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Then no one just says anything. That's amazing. Weird. Lovely to talk to you, Dr. Terry Simpkin. Can people find your work?
Yes, www.braverstrongersmarter.com.
Have a look at that. Lovely to talk to you this morning.
You're welcome.